Welcome to Adoption Talk by Spence Chapin, the podcast where all the voices of the adoption constellation come together. Twice a month, this podcast brings you conversations with adoptees, birth parents, adoptive families, and adoption professionals as they share their experiences and discuss all things adoption. We're glad you've joined us. Welcome to our final installment of our special series for National Adoption Awareness Month. While the month of November is coming to a close, there are so many more voices connected to adoption that we want to share. So look for more Stories of the Constellation episodes in the coming months. This week, we feature a story from a late discovery adoptee, which means that the adoptee learned that they were adopted later in their life. Melissa Guida Richards, an author, transracial adoptee, and advocate, shares her experience and her motivation for writing her latest book, What White Parents Should Know About Transracial Adoption, and its forthcoming workbook component. Listen as she shares her journey with Spence Chapin Community Programming Manager, Jessica Lucieri. Let's get started.
My name is Jessica Lucieri. I am a Colombian transracial adoptee, and I am also the manager of community events here at Spence Chapin. And today I am joined by Melissa Guida Richards, Colombian adoptee, and also the author of What White Parents Should Know About Transracial Adoption. Melissa, thank you so much for being here with us today and for sharing your voice on our podcast. I'd love if you could introduce yourself.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. We've been connected for a few years now, and I always appreciate chatting with you about the work that you're doing and just connecting on a personal level. For those of you who don't know me, hi, my name is Melissa Guida Richards. I am an adoptee advocate. I am an author. I write my book, like she mentioned, and I have another one coming out this summer, which is kind of a continuation of What White Parents. It's a workbook that's delving into more activities and more resources, as well as the POV from a trauma-informed therapist. It's amazing. It will be out this summer. I also work on essays and workshops with agencies and privately through my business with another adoptee partner. And yeah, so I've been trucking along in this field, I would say professionally, maybe 4 years now, but I am a late discovering adoptee, which means that I didn't find out until much later in life that I was adopted. And I personally was 19 when I found out. I am now 29. So it's been 10 years this month that I found out I was adopted and that I'm Colombian. So reconnecting with my identity and culture and birth family has been a journey, a long and complicated but beautiful journey.
Yeah, I can't, and thank you for mentioning that we've been connected for as long as we have, because I think within the last 2 or 3 years, you know, it's like we lose track of time. And it really has. It's been, you know, and Melissa also hosts a podcast called Adoptee Thoughts, which I was lucky enough to be a part of a few years ago, which is crazy to say now because it just seems like it was just yesterday. But it's so interesting to kind of think about our initial conversations back then and think about the time that's gone by, and it's 10 years for you, which is amazing. And, you know, I'm such a big fan of yours, and I hope you know that. and, you know, I think it's been really inspiring and encouraging as an adoptee, as a Colombian adoptee, to see your willingness and your readiness to share your story with the world and to put pieces of your story out there for the public to learn from and for them to really kind of understand the adoptee perspective. And I've said it to you before, it's like such an admiration that I have, because that takes a lot. And it really is, you know, it's unfortunately a courageous thing to do, Because you're putting yourself out there, and anyone who puts themselves out there, especially kind of leaving, you know, putting your story out there like that, it's, you're open for public consumption.
Mm-hmm. That is very true.
Yeah. What has the experience been like connecting with other adoptees, especially as a late discovery adoptee?
That is such a great question. I think, honestly, it's been so transformative for me to hear so many other adoptee stories. And as you know, like, we're not a monolith. We're made up of a beautiful, diverse environment of other adoptees, other transracial adoptees, and even same race adoptees, domestic adoptees, or international adoptees. There's some commonality that we all can relate to one another. But I find such beauty in the differences of our experiences and just being able to connect across countries, time zones now, with like everything being online, and being able to see everyone else's experience has definitely empowered me to feel more comfortable with my story, and also just to see the impact of adoption is. And, you know, as adoptees, we hear that positive adoption narrative so often. So it can be extremely refreshing and almost therapeutic to hear from other adoptees who love their adoptive families, but who have struggled with things along the way. And I, since finding out I was adopted, I've been in and out of therapy for these 10 years. And depending on the therapist, some are more helpful than others. But I think the most powerful thing is finding that community and kind of like supporting it through my podcast and through social media, and making those connections with other adoptees has been extremely powerful in making me understand myself better and just have people to support me who understand what it's like.
Yeah. That's, you know, I mean, you know, the last few years since COVID, you know, came into the world, I feel like it has been so incredible to see how people, you know, not even necessarily attached to adoption, but because we were all so isolated, I think everyone was really looking for community, whether we mm-hmm. realized that was what we wanted or not. You know, and I think that, you know, it's been wonderful to also see how that continues after that, because something was cemented in time, I think, especially for adoptees, when we all connected virtually. You know, in your podcast, I'm also interested in hearing, you know, what was it like? Were you able to interview other late discovery adoptees? And what are those conversations like? And maybe how do they differ from other conversations that you've had with other adoptees?
You know, I think I've been able to connect with a few adoptees I have found a little bit later in life, but usually their ages are around, like, I don't know, 12. It's typically not as late as me. I'm in conversation, not on the podcast. I've met like one or two that have been later than me, like 30s, 40s. And it's more typical for that time, because I think there was definitely a lot more secrecy back in like the 80s and 70s. That's what people were taught. I think it's easy to relate to them and their experiences. It definitely is the big shot, and a shock, and we share a lot of similar themes in our families. And unfortunately, what I tend to see is that the connection between adoptive families after such a revelation doesn't usually have quite a happily ever after like mine did. So that is definitely like a big difference that I've seen. The trauma after a secret coming to light and not being able to resolve that is unfortunately common.
You know, it's something else to mention is that your adopted mom wrote the foreword for your book. That's you know, without kind of knowing your story, with for those that don't know, and I'd love for you to share a little bit about, if you feel comfortable, I'd love for you to share, you know, about maybe your discovery of finding out that you are an adoptee, but, you know, that having your mom write the foreword for the book is just powerful to just even see on paper, to see that that's the case, because I think that speaks volumes in ways of kind of healing, right? Of like what that relationship could be between mm-hmm. a parent and a child, even after like, you know, sensational news like you received.
Yeah. So back when I was 19 and finding out, it was definitely like a very tumultuous environment. I came from a very passionate family. Both my parents are immigrants. My mom immigrated from Portugal when she was around 11, 12. My dad was a little bit older when he immigrated from Italy in his teens. And so I grew up in a family that was very passionate people. And we weren't like the average American family that I would have to get to know in like public school and stuff. We were very, very tight knit. I grew up, my family would speak in Italian and Portuguese, and we really didn't shy away from telling everyone how the other felt. So when this big, huge revelation came up, I definitely approached my parents very honestly, and I told them how upset I was. And unfortunately, there was just so many like heated emotions that it took about a year before we could actually like sit down and have an actual conversation about it. And I tried going to like college counselors because they were the only thing that I had access to at the time. And their advice for me was, you know, your parents did that. That was abuse. You should just cut off all ties.
That's the advice that you got?
Yeah, that's what they told me. They had no idea how to approach the situation. And instead of saying, you know, I'm not prepared, let me refer you to somebody else. That's what they told me. And so I already grew up in this immigrant family that people were already like, oh, your parents talk like that. You guys are like, they would see us as aggressive and stuff like that. And most immigrant families, whether you're Italian immigrants or Latino immigrants, that passion is definitely a commonality that I've been able to relate to with other people who are bicultural or multicultural. So just seeing that I was able to just take a look back and see the advice I was getting from like a trained professional, and then looking at my family and seeing what they saw as abuse was just parenting for them. Like my parents grew up with like nothing. They had to prepare us and like the rest of the family. They had to work really hard to get where they got. And so just certain things that were in our family didn't mesh with the American ideals. And so that's when I really was like, okay, well, no one else is going to help me. I have to help myself. Yeah. And so I took a lot of time in college is when I really got interested in learning about like racial identity and just like the impact of racism in our country. And I studied psychology and criminal justice. That was like my passion. I have a bachelor's in both. And that's when I kind of really learned about peer-reviewed journals and studies. And just in my spare time, like just in like psych classes, they'd ask us to come up with a project. And I would be like, well, what's the interactions with race and self-esteem? Like, how does that affect a person's identity and like how they feel about themselves? And I was seeing those connections within my own family. And so I started having these conversations with my parents every time I go home during break. We would sit down at the coffee table and we would have these big breakfasts that my mom would make. And we would just talk for hours. And it wouldn't be easy conversations. We'd be yelling, there'd be frustrations, there'd be pointing fingers, because we were just learning how to navigate this. And I would ask my parents at that very table, like, well, you know, you guys were adopting a kid from another country. Like, why did you do that? Like, who prepared you? Like, what was involved with the agency at the time? And my parents, they really didn't have a lot of education when it came to that. There weren't books that they were required to read. There was like a very basic home study where they needed some referral letters from people in their lives, from like employees, showing that they had work records and citizenship and that kind of stuff. But no one was like, you know, you're adopting a child from another culture, you need to learn X, Y, and Z. There was like a heritage camp, because I was adopted from Fauna, so they encouraged that. But it was like this very costly one weekend a year situation that was basically like a fundraiser for the agency to make like more money for whatever things that they needed money for in the agency. And so my parents, they went once or twice when I was too young to remember. I was like one or two. I had no memory of that. And they said, well, we did that. And, you know, after a while it became expensive and we didn't really see the importance of it. And so having these conversations over time, I was able to kind of just logically think about the resources that they had, think about how that affected my childhood and what their choices. And so we just opened up dialogue over and over and over again. And I was taught from a very young age that family is super important. Your family is like a big part of who you are. And, you know, I wasn't really taught to like disagree with my elders. So what I was doing and forcing those conversations, it was kind of because I knew if we didn't get past this, there was not going to be any healing. There wasn't going to be salvation. And our family wasn't going to be able to move past all of these things. And so I basically was like, you know what? I'm going to try. And I have to see that they're trying too. And if we can reconcile, like, I really want to push towards that. But also, I need to respect certain boundaries with the stuff that I'm learning, with the work I'm doing internally to heal myself. And I need to know that they're willing to do the same. And so it didn't really, I feel like we got to like a decent place where we weren't really upset with each other a lot.
Right.
I would say like 21, 22, and like we were okay. We weren't great, but we were okay. But then I ended up getting married, and once I became pregnant, I think that's where another thing changed for us, because I was really able to relate now, not just with my birth mother, but with my adoptive mother, because I faced infertility struggles too, and health issues throughout my life. So I was able to kind of have those moments where I understood that fear of not being able to have a family in the typical way that, from a conservative family, you know, getting married, have kids biologically, that was the happily ever after that I was taught. And so I was able to relate to my mom and be able to say, well, you know, this is what she dreamed of. This is what she was taught to do, like to become a mother, to raise her children, to be the woman of the house. That was literally like her one goal in life, and that was ripped away from her. And no one was telling her how to process these feelings. You know, therapy wasn't really normalized in their culture. And these were things you just didn't talk about. They were things that you pushed under the rug because you didn't want to confront these ugly things that no one knew how to talk about. And then that was that. So I was able to sympathize more with her choices, and it enabled me to have these more conversations with my mom and be able to understand what was going through her head. And she was able to open up to me. And in that vulnerability, we were able to connect and I think heal and move on, because it took a while for her to be open with the actual reasons. And she said, you know, she was very nervous. She didn't want me to want to go back to my birth family and excommunicate them, basically. She was worried that fear that one day I would leave and I would never come back because I wasn't her, quote unquote, real mom or whatever. But for me, it was never about that. It was never about real versus fake. My mom is my mom. She took care of me since I was a baby. She wiped my butt. She was there. She was, you know, that was never one of my things. My thing was you hid this big piece of my culture and my identity. And I had all these questions and experiences with racism growing up, and I didn't have a way to advocate for myself. And unfortunately, that was some place that they really lacked. And so I was experiencing racism as young as like first grade and kindergarten, where other little kids in school were saying I couldn't play with them because I was Black, because I spent so much time outdoors that I was much darker skinned than I am now. And so that's when like those differences started to come up at school. And I remember from like middle school to high school coming home, be like, why are people treating me like this? Why do I look like this? And I wouldn't have these answers. And so once I was in college and starting to do research and learning about racial identity models, white racial identity models, biracial identity models, I was able to have the vocabulary to explain to my parents, this is why it's important, because I'm trying to understand who I am. It doesn't mean I don't love you, I don't love your culture, but this is something that I'm going through that you've never had to experience. And so I think when I started writing more about my journey after having my two children, I would say, yeah, it was about like 5 years ago, I wrote an essay about being a late discovery adoptee on HuffPo, and that went like crazy viral. And let me tell you, that was the first time anybody in my family, other than my parents, my mom and dad, ever had a conversation about me and my brother being adopted. Wow. No one openly talked about it until that point. And at that point, I would say 25 years old. So there were older cousins, aunts and uncles, who hadn't had any type of conversation about us being adopted since we came to this country. And so people were very surprised, and they came up to my mom, and my mom was definitely a little reluctant about it, but yeah. I knew going into sharing my story, I approached her first and I said, hey, I need to write this essay. It's healing for me. I need to do it. And yeah, it upset her. I made sure she got to read it first before it was published. But it was what my dad said to her that really changed things. And I think that's when we saw a lot of progress. He just sat her down and he was like, look, we made the choices that we made because we did what we thought was best at the time. But if this is what she needs to do to heal, we need to support her. Yeah. And that's when kind of those wheels clicked. And from that moment on, even though my mom may not agree with every single thing I say, she is my biggest fan. She's my best friend to this day. I call her almost every other day. We text. We spend as much time as we can as possible. And we were able to heal and get to this point because both of us did the work. And we were able to compromise, but also hold firm to boundaries that were important. Like with my kids, I'm raising two boys, two Latino multi-race boys that are growing up as Latino men in this country. So I needed to be firm with my parents and say, like, you know, you guys may, let's say they, my dad, until the day he died 2 years ago, he still voted Republican. And so I'm like, you may have those beliefs and they may feel right for you, but certain conversations and certain topics, they are out of bounds. You're not going to be able to have those around my kids. And if you do, we're not going to come around. These are some of the, like, the difficult conversations that we had to do in order to get to this good place. It wasn't like just one day we decided everything was good and it worked out. Yeah. We worked on it. And so, eventually I decided to come up with this idea for this book. And I asked my mom, I said, hey, you know, we did this work together, and I feel like showing the rest of the world what that work can end up doing for a family and how well we are getting along now and how beautiful it is and our connection and how we've been able to heal. I think that's something we can show people. And my mom was way into it. She loved it. She wrote the forward, and it's been a very important piece to this puzzle, and I'm really glad that we got to share it with the world. And we've done a few interviews, my mom and I together, and that has been really special too, and I think it's also helped our journey.
Melissa, I mean, what a story. I hope that our listeners can really understand why I use the word that I did in the beginning, which is admiration, because for you to, in your formative years, you know, as a 19-year-old, where so many of us are just transitioning into college and into new social settings and culture shock. And, you know, for a lot of us who were, you know, raised in very homogenous or non-diverse neighborhoods, that is such a big time of just kind of looking inward while other people are seeing you and just seeing what's on the surface. And you have to kind of decide who you are. How does the world perceive me? How does my narrative kind of cover all the bases? How do I advocate for myself, but not feel like I have to overshare? Like that, these are complicated times. And, you know, this time of you finding this out about yourself while also navigating college and all of those other things, you know, to be able to do that work and to be able to, you know, give yourself your culture and give yourself a narrative that you're learning in real time and you're bringing home to your parents is incredible. I mean, when I was in college, I had a very similar situation. I went from, I didn't have diversity around me as a younger person growing up. But when I got to college, it was all of these questions about, for those listening, I'm not a late discovery adoptee, but it was when I was starting to look inward as people were just kind of starting to look at me and make assumptions of who I was, and I wasn't standing behind my parents. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't have that kind of that shield, which, you know, kids up until that point kind of usually have. People are asking questions, they're generally asking the parents. And so it was a lot of, you know, discovery of identity, whether I realized that was what I was doing or not. But that's a very vulnerable place. And it's an even more vulnerable and kind of isolating place when you are an adoptee. And that area of identity can be very gray. And, you know, as a younger person, we don't always have all the tools to kind of understand what it is to even have an identity, because, you know, you're just, you want to have, you know, you want to know your friends, you want to have a good time. There's not that much feeling of like, I want to be a different person. You kind of want to just go with the flow with everybody else. But these layers of identity happen so early on for us. And that experience of, you know, college, a new professional and educational spaces kind of force a perspective. Mm-hmm. And so I had a similar experience in like learning about my culture and taking classes that were focused on race and racism and identity and bringing it home to my parents and having conversations that we never had. We never would have talked about the importance of like bringing culture home if I hadn't brought the culture home, you know, I wasn't raised with it, right? And, you know, I think so much of the narrative, you know, that parents have been given back in, you know, back at the time when I was adopted was, you know, this is your child, you know, you raise them as they're your own and they're going to grow up and be these well-adjusted people. And there wasn't that much thought as to, you know, identity. Who are they going to, you know, how are they going to think about their birth, race, or culture? Birth, race, or culture probably was not really even highlighted as much. So now I feel like, and I don't know about you, but I feel so lucky to be a part of this generation of adoptees with you and with so many others who are out there and who are sharing their voices and sharing their perspectives, because now we get to find ourselves in the space that we are in exactly right now in this moment, where we're reaching parents to say, these are the things that affect us. These are the pieces of adoption that continue after placement. It's a lifelong journey. And just like you said, you know, you becoming a mother, you know, it gives you a new relationship with your own identity, with your own experience of what your mother had to go through. And then becoming a family and raising kids and being a mother on your own. It's just so fascinating to hear how much work you've done. So it almost seems as though you had no choice but to write this book. Do you feel like that?
I kind of do, because it felt like a compulsion, because when I was having these conversations with my mom, what happened was, is I was looking for resources that I could share with them. And I was delving into like every nook and cranny of the internet, the libraries, published resources that there were. And what I saw was that most resources are either written by adoption professionals or adoptive parents. So when I was trying to find something from the adoptee perspective, and there's a lot of like self-published books, and while like just self-published books tend to not be on equal footing depending on who's publishing it. So I was looking for more like traditionally published stuff with like peer-reviewed resources and stuff like that. And there weren't a lot of resources like that. And so I was just digging into all this information and I'm like, well, I write, why can't I do it? And it was kind of like an idea that I was just pulling with other adoptees in the community that I made online, because I made a lot of connections on Facebook. And I think that was like one of my saving graces, is just connecting with other adoptees. Totally. And I'm a millennial. So we were in like the era of Facebook groups being a big thing. Now it's like Instagram and TikTok. And I do those now, right? But like back then we didn't have those.
Yeah.
So Yeah, so I was like, you know what? If no one else is going to do it, I'm going to do it. I'm going to try to do it. And it ended up working out. I got a deal with the publisher, and I took a year and a half of research. And it was a very difficult time. I was, my dad was diagnosed with terminal cancer during that time. And I, in all like the trips to New York to help my parents through doctor's appointments and social security appointments for disability and whatever, I had my computer with me. I was researching, I was collecting articles. By the end, I would say, of that year and a half it took me to get all the research, the research was maybe like 2 feet tall of all the articles I had printed wow. from like psychology websites. And what I really love is that a lot of the stuff I gained access to was through the library, because my father-in-law, he lives in New York City, so he gives me his library card. So I was able to access all these peer-reviewed research articles by like actual like doctors and social workers and stuff. And I had piles and piles and piles of things. And I would just go through and be like, oh, okay, yeah, that's super important. Highlight. And by the day I was done with the work, like I had to pick and choose what would be in the book, what couldn't fit. Right. And it was just like this wonderful collection of things that allowed me to heal. It allowed my family to heal. And then my goal was so I could help other families not go through the struggles that me and many other transracial adoptees like yourself have to go through, and to totally. Make the journey a little bit easier. And so it definitely was like this thing I had to do. And now that it's out there, like I definitely feel a little bit more at peace knowing that there is that resource out there. And I feel like it helped pave the way for other authors to kind of get picked up by traditional publishers too, and have the support network of everything.
Yeah. And Alyssa, listen, I talk about your book a lot to other people. And I'm going to use the word admire, because I feel like that's just the only word that really works here. It's that the title of your book, What White Parents Should Know About Transracial Adoption.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love that that's what it's called, because there is, that is what it is. This is, there's no mistaking, there's no trying to soften the blow. Like, you are directing this at who you're directing it at. And it's really a read for anybody,
mm-hmm.
but it really, I really admire that. And I admired it even more because I can't imagine what it must have been like to come to that title and to go with it, knowing that it could be a little controversial to write, you know, to have a book that's the title.
Yeah. So, this is like a little known fact that some people who have been following me for a while like know that wasn't the original title. It was originally way more aggressive, I would say. I pitched the book as a white savior mentality. And I did that on purpose because I wanted to make sure that my publisher was 100% on board with the direction I was taking. And in early conversations with them, I said, look, this is a book to help adoptive families, but what I'm not going to do is shy away from tough topics here. We are going to go head on to these really difficult conversations, because if we don't, we're doing a disservice to the adopted children. And what we're here is not to tiptoe on adopted parents' feelings, because everybody does that already. Unfortunately, there's like a pedestal that adopted parents are put on. And while many adoptive families are beautiful and wonderful, what I've noticed in my work is that people are too scared of saying like the wrong thing or an aggressive thing that might scare adoptive parents from adopting. And so unfortunately, what gets left out is like a lot of necessary information. And adopting a child from a different culture, that's something that comes with challenges. And I believe that in order to make progress and to heal families and to make sure we're creating an environment that's prioritizing the needs of the child, we need to have direct conversations with adoptive parents that aren't going to shy away from these things.
Right.
And so Well, I wanted to be a little more aggressive, just to kind of, you know, there was books at the time that like The White Fragility, that those things were being picked up left and right. And yeah. So I wanted to address the problem and get people to start talking. And so we were able to come up with a compromise. So this was like my second title. I was like, you know what? Well, let's do this then. Like, what white parents should know about transracial adoption. And the funny thing is like, some people will say like, this is like, an aggressive title too, but I'm like, well, why
it's clear aggressive? I don't think it's aggressive. I think it's clear,
but like, some people will get offended because I say white parents. Of course. Why aren't you saying all parents? And I'm like, right. You know what it is though, the problem is that white is so often the default that when we have to specify white, feelings are getting hurt because it makes people uncomfortable. Right. And I talk about that in my workshops, like the umbrella of privilege and learning about like toxic positivity and stuff like that. But I wanted to have a title that would make people a little uncomfortable. And I made sure to have a prologue and like introduction where I laid it out. I didn't want there to be surprises in this book. I wanted people to know that it's probably going to make you upset at some points. Learning about racism, learning about white privilege, learning about white racial identity models is going to be uncomfortable if you've never been exposed to this. Right. And I make sure to say like, look, you don't have to read this in a day. Like, take your time with it. You don't have to agree with everything either. But what you do have to do is look at the research that has been done, look at the studies that affect, that are going to affect your children, and then, you know, take it from there. You don't have to, you know, have all the answers the next day, but this is a great step into learning more and opening up your family's beliefs and values to incorporate things that are really going to benefit your child. And so I think by using a title that is so honest and direct, it really opened the doors so people aren't just like surprised for what is in store. But I think it also opened the eyes to just like the adoption literature that's out there. And it also helps people look at what are the other resources there. Why are you leaning more towards these resources that are 30, 40 years old that are really outdated? And you're not opening your eyes to things that are more relevant to your family structure. Because one of the first things in an adoptive family, I believe, is pivotal to being more inclusive is for just parents to recognize that they have a racial identity themselves. So I think that starts at the title, and at the end of the book, you'll really be able to see what I was going for, and that it's not about judging adoptive parents. It's just having these conversations that are necessary,
right,
and being able to sit with these uncomfortable feelings in order to make progress. I'm a parent myself, a biological parent of two boys, and let me tell you, it's not easy being a parent in any shape or form. Right. There's going to be challenges, you're going to make mistakes, but what I feel like adoptive parents have is like this privilege of being on this pedestal, that they aren't as confronted with things that need to be changed. And so I think this book did that, and I'm really happy with it. And I think the next companion book that will be out this summer will take it to the next level and will help even more families.
Yeah. You know, I love that you mentioned how long it took for you to do this research and the lengths that you had to go through and the emotional lift that it was to go through, you know, this labor of love project that you're doing, that you're doing for yourself, that you're doing for others, that you're doing for the world of adoption. And I love that you mentioned how long it took, because, you know, this is a guide. This is a guidebook. This is a tool for people to use. And just like you would have a toolbox or, you know, a tool closet, there are things that you go back to, right? Like, you have to fix something, you need to go get that tool. So the book, I think, should be looked at as, you know, something that parents are using along the way, you know, and they're seeing it once they're implementing certain pieces and certain, you know, conversations that you've kind of placed in this book, they can see how it leads to the next, or how they can, or how things are maybe a little bit easier when the next, you know, the next whatever, you know, phase or moment in their family's journey comes. And I just think that it's a gift to be able to have this in your library. And even as for adoptees like myself, my parents have both passed, like, you know, it's a lot of magical thinking that I do over here about like, what would this book have looked like if my parents had this, if I could share it with them now, You know, if mm-hmm. I could go back and we could have some conversations, it really is kind of undoing a lot of, you know, generational things. But, you know, the work that you've put in and using resources that date back 30, 40, 50 years ago are important, because just like anything that people get involved in and become a part of who they are, it's important to understand where that thing came, that thing, quote unquote, came from. What is the history of that thing? It helps you better understand your connection to it. And so understanding what conversations used to look like in adoption and understanding what the tools and the resources the parents were given or not given back when you and I were adopted and a generation before us were adopted, you know, it's really kind of laying the groundwork to say, that's why this book is important. That's why these resources, that's why the adoptee voice and the adoptee experience influencing these pieces of material that they now get to consume and use in their family structure is it's the next step in the history. It's you know, it's healing again. I'm using the same words over and over again. But you know, it's really so incredible to just think about. I wonder what has it been like for you to have this book come out, you know, amidst COVID, and what has the reception of it been like for the people who've read the book and for those maybe within the field of adoption and fellow adoptees?
Yeah, so I was definitely ready for like some people who would love it, some people who would hate it. I knew that just writing essays publicly and them being out on the internet, the reactions that it could involve. But I also made sure, like you mentioned, I have all these resources that I wanted to prioritize. So it wasn't just like me sharing like a eulogy of like my feelings on adoption. Like all of like the points and advice that I give to adoptive parents and professionals are all backed by like 20 plus pages of resources in the back of the book. Everything is cited. So if people didn't agree with something, they could be able to look it up where I found that information, what news sources, what studies were done, and they could do that work on their own too, because I wanted to make sure that this wasn't just backed by like my emotions, it was backed by actual studies that would help children. And so I think that really helped the reception of it. And I was really pleasantly surprised by how well received it was. And I've had amazing opportunities come for it. I've been teaching, I've done dozens of workshops just this year alone. I did my first keynote at the beginning of National Adoption Month this month. And that was amazing at an adoption conference. And just, it's been opening doors to, I think, more agencies to take the initiative in hiring adoptee-led resources, and just to see how beneficial our points of view are, our lived experience, and what we've learned along our way to help teach other adoptive families. And so I was really pleasantly surprised. It got a starred review from like Publishers Weekly. It's gotten some amazing feedback, and I was able to do amazing interviews on like Tamron Hall and like Good Day LA. And so it got to a lot more people than I honestly expected. Mm-hmm. And because adoption is super niche, and then we have transracial adoption, which is another niche area of adoption in mm-hmm. general. But I honestly was taken aback and really happy with the reception it has. But it's also been like a little bit stressful because, you know, like COVID being in our homes, I did worry that I wouldn't be able to do like events out there. But luckily, a lot of it has been able to be done on Zoom or panels. I've made a lot of lovely connections with adoptee professionals too that work in the space that were adopted themselves like you. And that has been beautiful too. I've been able to collaborate a lot on other projects that are coming up. And I just am really happy, honestly. I of course, there's always bigger dreams and bigger goals down the road. But right now I'm really happy with how it's been able to succeed in this area and time that is so complicated and difficult for so many of us all.
Yeah. It's really incredible. I mean, you know, it's, you know, you say like, you know, adoption is niche, transracial adoption is niche. And I think, you know, it's, we can say that, right? But I think you and I also know how like, it really does touch more lives than people may think, you know, adoption mm-hmm. and transracial adoption. I can't imagine what is going to come next, but I am very excited for the workbook to come out. And just if you could share a little bit about what the workbook does and how that is to be used kind of with the book for our audience.
Yeah, so I came up with this idea for an extended type version. So there's a little bit, I would say like 1/5, maybe 1/6 of material is from What White Parents Should Know About Transracial Adoption. But it was really about taking it and elevating it to the next level. I really wanted to work with a trauma-informed therapist for this. So I was able to work with Marcella Maslow. She's a licensed social worker who's been working in this field for a while now. And so she wrote the foreword for the workbook, and she also added like these little notes throughout it, throughout the information that I have in it, to kind of take activities and just little tidbits and facts to the next level to help adoptive parents and adoption professionals to kind of like add more insight based on her experience. Right. And in it, we talk more about like the role of infant mother bonding, really getting more into the history of adoption and recognizing illegal and unethical practices that are still happening today. We're looking more at implicit bias, white saviorism, fragility, how there's a whole section of on how to locate and utilize adoption competent mental health care. There's a lot of tips and advice about incorporating racial mirrors down to like hygiene and skincare. I had a licensed esthetician talk about how the differences just on a molecular level, how our skin, you know, black and brown people, we need more moisture, things like that. So I had a bunch of experts come in. I have a dozen contributions from adoptees that were transracially adopted themselves, and they wrote poems, short essays and stuff just to include their perspective, because I want to give a varied array of like, you know, the adoptee experiences in a monolith, like we said earlier. And so basically it's more of like an inclusive guide that will give you like step-by-step activities and stuff that have concrete ways for you to take things to the next level. Cause I think that was like kind of the comment that I was getting a lot with my first adoption book. People had this material, but they didn't really know how to take it and apply it to their day-to-day lives. So this has like step-by-step activities that you can include every holiday. These are tips and tricks, books, resources, questions to ask yourself, looking at your library and identifying what materials are you learning from? Are you giving enough voices to the BIPOC authors? Or is your library reflective of what you were used to growing up and there's not enough racial mirrors in the literature and the media that you're taking in? So it's really about like analyzing and taking things to the next level and helping parents become more trauma-informed and anti-racist and walking them through it. I think it's like holding your hand through these steps. And I think it's able to really help add a different perspective. And at the end, I have a few adoptive parents that have shared their journey about the work that they've done that have really helped their family and shown how this work really helps at such a like minute level in your life and how it's opened their eyes to different things in their life.
Yeah. Wow. Incredible, Melissa. Incredible. I mean, it's really, really wonderful to see, you know, how much you've put into this and all of the resources that you've looked into and how much you've utilized the community, which I think is always the ultimate goal, right? In supporting adoptees and essentially adoptive parents also. We're trying to strengthen the future generations of adoptees because, you know, giving back to what we didn't have, you know, and I think we're all doing it in ways. For me, it's with programming and creating services, you know, and, you know, with your book and with all of the, you know, everything that you put out there into the universe and resources for people, what you keep creating, what I'm sure you will continue to create down the line. You know, we're giving back to essentially, you know, younger versions of ourselves and our parents. And, you know, as an adoptee and as a fellow Colombian adoptee, It's just really wonderful to watch you, you know, grow into this incredible world, renowned, worldwide, you know, known author who's doing the work and who's really, you know, finding support from within too, and highlighting those voices. Melissa, I just want to say thank you so much for a wonderful conversation. We will be sure to share all of your information, where people can find your book, where people can find you and your website and the work that you're doing, and connect with you also. Thank you so much for this lovely conversation today, and congratulations on all of these wonderful pieces of work that you've done and that you continue to do.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Adoption Talk. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating wherever you get your podcasts. You can also head to spence-chapin.org/adoptiontalk to leave feedback, suggest episode topics, and sign up for updates on the latest episodes. See you next time.